This is a podcast for Monday, October 21st, 2013, Ethics. So just a reminder about the exam. You have until Wednesday to take it, close of labs, which is 7 o'clock. If you're taking it at the Cottage Grove Center, also 7 o'clock. That means you have to arrive at the lab on Wednesday no later than 6 o'clock if you want to take it that day. If you have any questions about material on the exam, feel free to send me Moodle IM. Also, you can make an appointment to see me outside office hours. I have office hours this week. Let's see, tomorrow they're at from 10 to 11, and then on Wednesday from 11 to 12, but I'm also available at other times. Let's see other announcements. Oh, in our discussion, some of the students listening to the podcast have had trouble hearing comments and questions from students. So please speak up. And I was going to say that I'm going to come and point the microphone at you, but I can't do that today because I have no battery, so I'm running this off my laptop. So because my batteries are dead. So you're going to have to make an extra effort to speak loudly so you're picked up on the recording. And one of these days I'll get a microphone that will just for students, and you'll have to go to the center aisle to speak. Okay. So today, psychological egoism, and I hope to not spend too much time on that and then get right into ethical egoism. So someone wanted to tell me what's the difference between psychological egoism and ethical egoism. Very important distinction, and it'll be the first question on the next exam. Psychological egoism and ethical egoism. Yes.
Ethical egoism says that you should do what's ever in your best interest, and psychological egoism says that everybody already does.
Excellent. So the difference between should and does. Anybody know what the term for that is? Like the difference between statements about what one should do or what one ought to do or what one's obligations are versus what the facts are or what people do.
Prescriptive and descriptive.
Excellent. Prescriptive and descriptive. So psychological egoism is a descriptive theory. It says what people do or how people are. So the theory of human nature. And importantly, it's not a moral theory. Why is it a moral theory? Psychological egoism.
Much better.
Ethical egoism says what people should do or what they ought to do. It doesn't tell you anything about what people are or whether people do what they ought to do most of the time or not. It just says this is what people should do. And it's not a theory of human nature. It is a moral theory. The theory about right and wrong, right? About what's good and what's bad. So it's a moral theory proper. So that's the distinction between the two. And there are implications, if you believe in psychological egoism, for what kind of a moral theory you can have, and they seem to be related to ethical egoism. So psychological egoism says what? That everyone's selfish? Is that really capture it, or might there be another way of saying that? Like, is a person who just thinks people are basically selfish, is that person necessarily a psychological egoist? Or what would you have to add that?
You think everyone's like that too?
Yeah, so most people are selfish most of the time. Is that psychological egoism?
Everyone is selfish and behaves in a selfish manner.
Just as a generalization of how people are most of the time?
Sure. That would be
psychological. Nope, it's not psychological egoism.
No.
So there's a key distinction here. I mean, a lot of people have this view that most people are selfish.
Well, maybe selfishness doesn't exist. It's just human nature. It's like, you don't have to add selfishness. They're not just being selfish. They're being natural.
Well, but then you're just saying it's natural to be selfish. But that's... I'm not sure what you're. I mean, you're adding something, but that's not necessarily also about psychological. I see where you're going there, and that might be part of it. It's like a theory about human nature, not just about what happens to be the case or the way things turned out. But it says there's a reason for it, rooted in human nature. Yeah.
Is that no one is never not selfish?
Exactly. So unselfishness. Everyone is always selfish. And that unselfishness is impossible. There's never been an unselfish act.
And that's human nature.
Yeah, that psychological ego says that's part of our human nature, that it's impossible for you to commit an unselfish act or to perform an unselfish act. Yeah.
What about people who like go off to war or to protect, not even like just our war and stuff, but they're just like, well, yeah.
But they're doing it for the family, and because they do it for the family,
they
don't want their family to hurt, so they're being selfish because of their emotions.
Yeah, or what if someone gives like someone a sweater or something like that, and you give them your sweater because they're like, we're colder than you. Uh-huh. What about that?
Yeah, what would the psychological ego say about that? Way in the back, you have to shout real loud.
That just makes you feel good yourself for helping somebody else out, though.
Yep. The reason why you do something to make somebody else feel good is because it makes you feel good, too.
Or you're guilty and you want to assuage that guilt.
Right, so you're trying to assuage guilt feelings and avoid feeling bad. Because like when your behavior is motivated by something, it can either be motivated by a desire to feel good or by a desire not to feel bad. Right.
But what if your desire is just to make them feel good?
I think
thinking first, like, oh, this is going to make me feel really good to give them my sweater. I'm just like, oh, my God, they're cold, dude. Give them my sweater. You know, maybe that might be the afterthought later, maybe, or even if that happens. But that doesn't mean, like, automatically the first place, like, our minds are going to go to is that's going to make me feel so good to go volunteer at the soup kitchen for 3 hours, you know.
Most of this is subconscious, though.
So an argument is like, oh, well, even though you don't think I'm going to do something to make somebody else feel good, it's like your subconscious is sort of doing that anyway without your knowing it. So you might not feel selfish, but actually you're acting as selfish as someone who hits an old lady over the head and steals her purse, according to psychological egoism. There was a hand up someplace? Yeah.
What if it's more of an act where you do it out of like, you know, like, let's say, you know, you're on the street and your kids are on the street with you and, you know, you want them to eat instead of you. That's not really being personally selfish if you're wanting your kids to eat instead of you. And I don't think you're doing it to make yourself feel good.
Well, wouldn't you feel bad if your kids were hungry?
Huh?
Well, wouldn't you feel bad if your kids were hungry?
There's a massive biological imperative to support your own progeny, so you probably feel pretty crap unless you're a psychopath. If your kids were hungry and you just ate all the food, I wouldn't.
Yeah, so the idea is you'd feel bad if you didn't do that, make that sacrifice. And worse, and if you don't do the sacrifice, then obviously you'd feel worse not feeding yourself and letting the kids go hungry. Let's see, that the right way. So if you do feed the kids, then obviously that's what's going to make you feel better. If you don't feed the kids, then you obviously feel better about feeding yourself.
There are people who don't feed the kids. Like,
right, yeah.
So who are they?
Well, like everybody in this room, pretty much. Everybody in this room has a bunch of gadgets they don't need. They spend their money on frivolous things like going to a 3D movie or drinking on the weekends or smoking pot or whatever. Everybody here has something they like to do. You got cable TV you're paying $100 a month for. You got all this stuff. And like there's people starving in third world countries. And so, you know, you could take that money and send it there, but what do? You just, you know, you hoard it for yourself. Maybe give a little bit away to charity just so you don't feel bad. Like there's some homeless guy there, some guy who's like, you know, can't get off the sauce and get a job. You give him like $5, but the starving kids in Ethiopia, they don't get anything from you. And you probably feel okay about it. But why is that? Because you're selfish. And now, psychological egoism wouldn't say that just most people are selfish, isn't it terrible, but it would say that everything you do is rooted towards fulfilling some desire you have. Fulfilling the desire is inherently selfish, that desires that we have are desires to feel good or to not feel bad. And that's all there is to motivation. And so even sacrificing your life, like what would a psychological egoist say about a guy who jumps on a hand grenade to save his buddies in a war situation?
Burden of conscience or something? You won't live with himself?
Yeah, he can never live with himself as if his buddies were all killed. Or he has a sense of duty. But what does that mean? It means he has a desire to do something brave or that he feels good about sacrifice himself for others. It's still feeling good. It's just a desire for self-destruction, but it's still a desire. You know, people have desires to kill themselves, right? That kill, like suicide is a selfish desire too. Is a desire to not feel pain. Yeah.
So it seems like what most people think is unselfish. So a psychological ego is it's impossible to do anything selfish.
Right.
Unselfish. Sorry. Like it's impossible to do anything unselfish.
That's right. There's always some selfish motive, even if it's not apparent. If you pick it apart, you'll see what it is.
Everything will be selfish.
Right.
Selfish is almost kind of a misnomer for egoists because there's no contrast or comparison. Like it's just the way things are, right?
Well, this is a problem with like the idea of not necessarily the self, but selfish. What does selfish even mean? Like, what if I were to say everything's hot? That the world is full of heat, and that there's no such thing as coldness. There's only heat. It could be a kind of funny claim, right? Because you think, well, in order to have a concept of heat, you think, well, it's somebody says it's hot today. Well, compared to what? Well, compared to Anchorage, Alaska, right now, right, or what have you. But maybe it's cold compared to San Francisco. I left the weather report there, and it's like nice and sunny. It's like going to be 79 today. I'm like, wow, that's kind of cool. So, or hot. So, it's all relative, right? Now, I don't want you to think moral relativism. That's a bunch of nonsense. But it's that the concepts of hot and cold are relative terms. It seems like the same thing is true with selfish and unselfish. There are degrees of selfishness. There are degrees of unselfishness. And to say that everything's selfish just seems like an outlandish claim. Every act is selfish. Not everyone is selfish, and every act is selfish. Every act is equally selfish, right? That too. Yes, sir.
Impossible is a really definite word. Is there any way you can break that under those guidelines? Like, is there any way you could do it?
So the question, to repeat for people in the contest, remember, speak up, please. So the question is, what does impossible mean? Is there any way a person could act unselfishly? According to psychological egoism, it's a logical impossibility because every time you do something, you're motivated by desire. Desires are inherently selfish. They're about you. They're not about other people. They're about a desire to obtain pleasure or avoid pain. And so people just have different ways of obtaining pleasure and avoiding pain. For example, some people go out and help the poor and the homeless, because that's the way they get pleasure, like Mother Teresa. other people go out and they, it's all God and country, and they go fight for freedom or whatever, and that's their way of getting pleasure. Then to avoid pain, sometimes people to avoid pain, they, you know, help the poor and the down and out because it helps them feel better about themselves. They don't feel so guilty. But other people, like, go out and harm people because it makes them feel better. Like people that vandalize private property, people that go out and beat up random people because they're angry at this or that, right? Those people, in order to not feel bad, they do something bad to somebody else. That's a common occurrence. So the idea of the psychological egoist is that although people do different things to feel good or feel bad, it's all based on feeling good or feeling bad.
So is there actually people out there like that, or is this just an idea from...
Oh, no. Okay, psychological egoism is a theory about everyone and their motivation. So it's not... Are you saying, are there people that believe in psychological egoism as a theory? Or are you saying, are there people who never commit an unselfish act out there?
The latter. Is there people that all they do is consider themselves and everything is a selfish act?
Well, I want to make this clear that psychological egoism says that even people who appear to always be thinking about other people are still thinking about themselves. It's just that it's harder to see sometimes. Like a person who sacrifices everything for her children, she is doing that because she cares most about what happens to her children. That's a desire on her part. And she cares more about that than having, say, some creature comforts or to pursue her hobbies or whatever else she might be doing if she wasn't spending all her time focusing on the kids.
So they think in order to stop... They think in order to stop yourself from, feeling pain, they think that's selfish?
Yeah, it's like, I don't want to feel pain, therefore I'll do something. Like, you know, I'd feel guilty if I didn't give money to this to charity. So I do that. I'm not doing it because those people need my help. I'm not doing it because I care about them. I might feel sorry for them, but that feeling sorry for them is really a bad feeling I have in myself that I want to get rid of.
So this is just a psychological theory since it's not a moral theory?
Right. Yes, sir.
It's not like helping other people almost inadvertently in psychological egoism are somehow mutually exclusive. I mean...
Well, psychological egoism doesn't deny that people help other people. It just says that it's selfish. Yeah, it says that it's motivated by selfish desire.
Right, so that's where the confusion comes from. Because people see acts that help other people benefit someone other than the doer, and they say, oh, how is that an egoist act, right?
Yeah, it seems like people do things which are not in their interest at all. Like, I'm thinking of an example, give away your coat to someone when it's cold, and then you're cold and they're not. But the psychological egoist would say, but you care about their feelings, you want to see them feel good, and you'll feel good about giving them your coat. Yeah.
It just seems kind of crazy that if, not with that example, but if like, if you're, you know, if you're only doing something to not feel pain, that's selfish. That seems kind of...
You want yourself, aren't you? Desire to not feel pain.
Yeah, so that's egotistic.
It's still intrinsic to yourself. I mean, you aren't thinking...
You know what I mean, then?
I suppose if a person is in pain and they want to get out of it, like, suppose... I guess you're standing in line at the drugstore and there's a person who's like, I'm in pain, I need to get my pain meds, and you're there to pick up, you know, something that doesn't have to do with pain relief. Maybe you need a treatment for your bunions or something, right? So you're standing and they're like, oh, can I cut in line in front of you? I'm just in such pain. You're like, nah, forget about it. I want to get out of here, right? It seems like the person not wanting to feel pain, it's not what we call selfish. And maybe because they're in cases where alleviating your pain doesn't mean causing someone else pain or depriving them from something. We don't ordinarily call it selfish. Often selfish acts are considered to be those which benefit you and no one else, or which benefit you at the expense of someone else.
Mm-hmm. This is a more broad definition of selfish.
And so there's an ambiguity in selfish. In your interest versus and at someone else's expense.
So a psychological egoist would they believe that even acts that are good would possibly be like a subconscious impulse to do something for yourself?
Right. So their answer to
it doesn't have to be a conscious thought, so that it sounds like they would consider that subconscious or consciously you're making decisions.
I don't feel like I'm being selfish. When I help others, my motive has to do with them, not me. And the answer is, you know, it's subconscious. Okay, well, I suppose you can say that with anything, right?
Yeah, but then how is that a fact? Like, how do you know the subconsciously happens? If you can't, just that's going to happen.
Philosophy isn't based on fact.
Yeah, but then
yes, it is.
Right. What do you mean philosophy is not based on fact?
I mean, it isn't based on facts.
Philosophy is all about facts. Philosophy is about trying to understand the truth about the world.
It's not based on absolute truths.
Literal
truths.
True philosophy is based on absolute truths. That's an absolute fact. And it's the truth. But that's a little too general a question for this class. Theories of knowledge deals with that. But I'm not going to let that slide. Philosophy, that's all about trying to understand the truth about the world.
Trying
through the use of reason.
What? Well, trying to.
Well, trying to just means you're making an attempt. It doesn't mean that you're going to fail. But it's an attempt to understand the truth about the world through the use of reason. And it is an attempt because some people succeed while others fail. And you set yourself up for failure at the beginning if you say, well, true for me, true for you, or philosophy doesn't have anything to do with the truth. Well, if you think philosophy has nothing to do with the truth, of course you're not going to get to the truth using philosophy. But like I said, that's like way in another field.
So this answer, it's subconscious. That's just the answer that these people who believe this theory would apply to them.
Yeah, it's a possible answer. It's a subconscious mind. You think you're doing it to help someone else, but down there, you know, below the surface, there's this me.
Right, and that's not that they're not making a value judgment if that's good or bad. They're just saying it's selfish in a broad sense.
Correct. Often, I think if I were to psychoanalyze people that believe in psychological egoism, I think people find it comforting because it's an excuse for their selfish behavior. They're like, "Well, everybody's selfish anyway," and so it's a very convenient theory when you come to put moral theories that will allow that. You know, it's a very useful tool of rationalization, to put it that way. Yeah.
So now this psychological egoism, say that everything you do is, you know, because of your desire, right? But is it possible that maybe your actions, do they all have to be because of desire? Can you do something not out of desire?
That's a really good question. We'll come to the philosopher Kant, and Kant says that's definitely the case. He would say that, the philosopher Kant would say that you can act on on the moral law. You can do something because it's your duty, not because you want to, but because you should do it. Mm-hmm. And that when you're doing something because it's the right thing to do and because you should do it, that's coming from a completely different place. You're acting from pure reason and not from desire. And so that might be another possible answer here. So,
right. Sometimes I do things I don't want to do, but I have a motivation, and that's like, oh, well, at least it will build character. So isn't that kind of selfish, too?
What was it? What? Tell me the last
thing. If your motivation is, oh, well, I don't want to do it, but if I do it, I'll build character. So wanting to build character, that's selfish, too?
I suppose a psychological egoist might say that. I think Kant would say that people have a desire to develop character, and that's sort of a good thing because it will motivate you to want to do it. But you might also recognize that you have a moral obligation to develop your character, to become a better person. So there's two things. You recognize what your duty is, and then and that's going to motivate you, but also you might have some extra desire that sort of helps you along. But Kant says, you know, both can exist. You can do something because it's the right thing to do, and you can also want to do something because it's the right thing to do. Those aren't mutually exclusive. So I could say, like, for example, I want to be honest. Why? Because it makes me feel good. But I'm also honest because I feel like I should be, or I believe that I should be. And that could be totally unrelated to the warm, fuzzy feelings I have about thinking about myself as a good person, or any benefit I might get from it whatsoever.
So, every act is motivated. Yeah. Let me put this down here.
So these people who believe in this theory, are they anti-realists?
Now, it's an interesting question. What moral theory is possible? If you accept psychological egoism, that all acts are selfish, and that altruism, which is acting for the sake of another person, is impossible, then what kind of a moral theory would it be possible for you to have?
The Glaucon one?
I mean, that's one. You could be a skeptic. What about, like, the realist theories? All that are selfish, every act is motivated by desire.
The individualism or
subjectivism?
Subjectivism. But what if, you know,
what if that the ego is? Because that's pretty much one man after his own needs.
How about the non-relativist, the realist theory? So look at the absolutist theories we have. Deontology, utilitarianism, divine command theory, virtue ethics, and Nietzsche. which of those, if every act is selfish, what's your moral theory? What can your moral theory tell you to do? Could you have a moral theory which told you that you had to do things that was impossible for you to do?
Yeah.
Well, it wouldn't make sense, right? Not off.
Could you address Joseph Butler's argument?
On what?
Psychological movement.
You want to pitch it for me?
Let's say that I get welfare out of helping people, right?
Uh-huh.
If I couldn't... It's kind of confusing. If I didn't have any desire to see them do well, then I couldn't get, you know, I couldn't be, you know, satisfied by them doing well.
Yeah, I think that just goes back to, I think, what I said about desire, that the reason why you want to help someone else and the reason why you have any desire whatsoever about their welfare is because you derive a certain sense of satisfaction from seeing them receive some benefit. So desires which appear to be about other people are actually about you and about you satisfying the desire to see them do well.
So I think that just is covered under this all desire is selfish thing.
So what school of real?
Yeah, what theory, you know, could you, what moral theory could you glom on to psychological ego? Oh, let's put this. If you have psychological egoism, and then if you also believe odd implies can. So this is odd implies can is a principle that's pretty much accepted in ethics, which is that if it's true that you have a moral obligation, then it has to be possible for you to do it. So, for example, I can't have a moral obligation to swim out and save a drowning child if I can't swim. I can't have a moral obligation to, something else that's impossible for me to do. Fly to the moon and bring back a piece of moon rock to placate a terrorist who's going to blow up a building or what have you, right? Because it's impossible for me to do. So I have no... Now, I might have an obligation to call for help. Like the drowning child, I might have an obligation to call for help, get a lifeguard, do something, find a boat. I mean, there's lots of different things I can do, but I don't have an obligation to swim out if I can't swim. And we're assuming that, like, if I got in there and tried to swim, I'd just drown. It's not saying I have to swim well, but just assume I don't swim at all. If I don't swim at all, I have no obligation to swim out and save a drowning child. So if that's true, if that I can't have an obligation to do something I can't do, then if I can't act unselfishly, then all the moral theories that say I have to act unselfishly are all out the window, right? So what's left? Skepticism or how about other realist theories?
Would it be deontology?
Definitely not. Now, why is deontology the worst answer you could have possibly gotten?
I don't know.
Deontology is all about other people. Kant sort of is like this dour German who's all about obligation and duty, and this idea you have an impersonal duty to everyone and everything, and that you got to spend all your time thinking about what's moral and what's right, and desire. Kant's sort of like a killjoy. He was like a pietist, a Puritan type, and the whole idea of thinking about your own happiness and pleasure is like way, way, way at the bottom of the.
He says, like, results don't matter, that, you know, the rules and principles matter. So what I was thinking is it doesn't matter if you can't swim. You still have to go out and try to save them, even if you drown. Hmm. It's the idea that you tried.
I think Kant might say that even if you couldn't. Kant would say if you really couldn't, maybe you shouldn't kill yourself, you know, in the attempt, because that would be foolish. And actually, I think suicide's immoral, and that would probably count as suicide. Yeah.
So I'm thinking that psychological egoists could probably have more than one, and they could either be anti-realist or egoist, right? Which is thinking about, isn't egoism thinking only about yourself?
Right. So the ethical egoism. So ethical egoism is the only theory that we've looked at that says it's okay to be selfish, or it doesn't tell you to do anything that's unselfish. Now, I suppose there might be a possible religion where God commands you to be selfish all the time, but you know that might be like a broad logical possibility. But if you look at any of the versions of divine command theory, religions typically tell you to pay attention to other people, and the Western religions say that being selfish is sinful. The Eastern religions say that your ego is the problem, and desire is the problem. You need to detach yourself from desires and so on.
What about a philosophy that is more broadly defined, kind of like say this? What's the one that every act should be towards the greater good?
What do you call it, the greater utilitarianism?
So what if you believe that everyone acting in their own interests or being selfish goes towards that ultimate goal?
Well, that's really interesting too, because you know one of the arguments I think you can make against Ayn Rand, who's an ethical egoist, is that she's a quasi utilitarian because she wants everyone to act in their interest so that we can have a sort of an egoist paradise, because that will be better for everyone. But still, you still have, so you still, it's not utilitarianism though, it's still, the idea is that if it wasn't in your interest, if it didn't create the greater good, you should still do it. In other words, if psychological egoism is true, then it's not true that you should always work for the greater good, because in cases, if there were a case where the greater good conflicted with your interests, you'd have to go with your interests. You'd have to follow self-interest. So it's still, even though the results might be the same, it still wouldn't be utilitarianism, because utilitarianism says that what makes an action right is that it serves the greater good. Actually, it's, but to be more precise, that's consequentialism, that says it's the right act is one that produces the best consequences for everyone, for the whole world. But if psychological egoism is really true and you have a choice between serving your own interests, your selfish interests, and doing something which makes the world a better place, you're always going to go with your selfish interests. Now, what happens if those always converge in every case? That's kind of a weird claim, I suppose. I suppose you'd say it's still as a pretty tall order to try to show that any selfish act furthers the greatest good, greater good. I know some people try to argue that, but I think that's a tough, and I think totally implausible factual claim. But I wanted to get this. Think about this logically. If all acts are selfish, and a moral theory can't tell you anything, if all acts are selfish and altruism is impossible, that it's impossible to do something for someone else, then the only moral theory you can have is the one that says that you only have an obligation to your own interests. That's ethical egoism. And I suppose under this theory, if you believe that every selfish act also served the greater good, ethical egoism and utilitarianism would be coextensive theories, as the philosophers say. But it's something serving the greater good might not be what makes it good. Think about these hypotheticals. It's kind of, I'm not really sure. It's the first time someone's asked that, so I'm not sure how that would work. But the main thing I want to get you to understand, though, is that if all acts are selfish and unselfishness is impossible, this implies can means that the only theory left is that it'll work is ethical egoism, because all the other theories tell you to act unselfishly. Yeah.
What about regret? What if I gave someone my laptop on the street and I went home and regretted it and couldn't really take it back? How does it deal with that?
You mean psychological egoism?
Yeah. Because it seems that would be contrary to my self-interested nature.
Well, you just might have made a mistake about what was in your interest, and that's why you feel regret. Like you thought one thing was going to get you what you wanted, and then after you did it, you realized that it didn't. I just had some experiences in that realm recently, and you know, why do you feel so bad when you made a choice and you thought it was in your interest at the time, but later on you're like, oh, I totally did the wrong thing, I totally blew it, and now it's going to be like repercussions for years and years. It's because you didn't get what you want.
So making a mistake is okay as long as the initial motivation is still selfish.
Well, it's not like we're not talking about moral theory, remember? So it would just describe, it'd say the reason why people feel regret is that they're always trying to fulfill their desires. Sometimes they make a calculation and do something or don't do something, which leads to them not having their desires fulfilled, and that makes them feel bad. You had your hand for quite a while.
Yeah. So I was thinking, like a psychological egoist, wouldn't he say that under ethical egoism, everyone is perfectly morally perfect?
Yeah, if everyone acts selfishly, then everyone is morally perfect, right?
Yeah. set up here.
So that's kind of a weird... I mean, most people think about everyone being selfish all the time as being kind of a nightmare of chaos and anarchy and the world would suck. Or people think, well, everyone being selfish all the time is why the world sucks. But this is a maybe a good segue to talking about ethical egoism. But before that, let's talk about some objections to psychological egoism. So what might be some reasons why psychological egoism might be a problematic theory? Talked about a couple already.
It assumes all actions are motivated through desire.
Yeah, so you might say, let's see, that's right over, that one right over here. Well, let's just start with the first obvious criticism is it's sort of psychologically unreal, or you know, wait to say this, it's I mean, every time you think about doing something for someone else, do you think, oh, if I open the door for that person, boy, I may get some warm fuzzies, or, you know. You don't think that. You just do it because you want to help somebody. Why do you want to help someone? You think, oh, if I help people, I'll feel good about myself. No, you just do it like force of habit. But why is that? I suppose there might be some associations in your unconscious mind. But in your conscious motivation, where you see a person in need, you're doing it to help that person. That's your motivation. Now, you feel good afterwards. I think someone said, I think you said that feeling good is something that has, and you said that too, that feeling good is something that happens afterward as an effect. It's not the cause of your action. It's an effect of it. And it doesn't mean the next time you're trying to help someone that you're being caused to do that by that effect beforehand, or that effect before, or all the times you help people and you felt good about yourself. You're still doing it to help others. So it's the good feelings. Are an effect, not a cause. This other idea is that if unselfish acts are impossible, selfishness has no meaning, or selfish has no meaning. You think about, like I said, what if I said everything was hot, or the world was full of heat? That doesn't make any sense if you don't have the, if everything's hot, then what is this hot-cold distinction? And if I say, well, what is, if you say, well, isn't it cold in, at the North Pole? And I would say, no, there's just less heat. Or I would say, but it's equally hot. I don't know what it is. The analogy might break down a little bit because those are relative terms. But so are selfish and unselfish, right? If I say, well, it's hot compared to zero, so if I say it's hot compared to absolute zero, maybe that would be true. But the whole selfish and unselfish in ordinary usage are opposite terms. Yeah.
Dark and light, good and evil. Like, I mean, you need contrast to give meaning to something.
Yeah, exactly.
Like,
so and selfish. Now, not every term has an opposite, but selfish does seem to have an opposite, unselfish. And the theory recognizes this. So that's a problem. And then this are all desires selfish? Does everyone, or can you only act on desire? So,
is desire the only motivation?
Yeah, it's
motivating force.
second motive. Now, E.G. Kant says no.
So a lot of criticisms of psychological egos, and most philosophers reject this as say, if you go by consensus, most people think it's philosophically problematic for these reasons and others. And then maybe there's this ambiguity between an act which only benefits yourself versus an act which actually harms someone else and enriches you. So there's like three things, right? It could be you could perform an act which benefits you and no one else. You could perform an act which benefits you and actually harms someone else. And then you could perform an act which benefits you and benefits someone else. And that third thing people typically don't see as selfish. The second thing, I think people are mixed on whether if you do something that only benefits yourself, whether it's selfish or not. Doing something that benefits you and harms someone else at the same time, that's usually what people mean when they're talking about selfish. Yeah.
I was just thinking, is it possible that one could do an unselfish act driven by instinctive desire to communicate? We are social animals. Or to survive? Would that be something a psychological egoist would argue?
But how many acts are actually motivated by survival, though? Like, in the U.S., very few.
Well, we're social animals, too, just to be in the mix, you do things for others.
Oh, okay, I see. So the reason why we have this natural proclivity, well, are you saying that's the reason why people are altruistic?
It's a question, it's not a statement.
Okay, yes. So are you wondering if the reason why people don't behave selfishly all the time is because we're social animals and that's, but that, are you saying that it ultimately benefits us to be unselfish, so actually acting in a seemingly unselfish way is actually selfish because it makes us survive.
Yeah, it's a question of maybe psychological egoist would argue, maybe perhaps they've done some research or this is an idea that they've come to conclusions, that's why man is selfish. I don't know. It's just a thought.
I mean, all sorts of explanations about, you know, what. How the self, like there's this whole discussion of whether there could ever be a selfish, whether there's a selfish gene, or whether, or how evolution could allow altruism, because it seems like it would be bred out of the species, right? If you have a person who has an inherited predisposition to help others, it seems like they would get kicked out of the gene pool, right? They wouldn't reproduce as much. They'd always be sacrificing for others. But then one of the arguments is, well, that person, if they're giving to the community, then maybe that's reciprocated, that people like it when people help them, and so the person's likely to get someone else to help them. Whereas a person who acts selfish all the time, when they're in trouble, maybe people aren't going to risk helping them, and they're going to die out more often. So that might be, or it might be that communities of animals where self-sacrifice sort of operates are more likely to survive against competing groups of animals because they're stronger as a group, because individuals are willing to sacrifice. Did you get your hand first?
Yeah, this was a little while ago, but it popped in my head. But when I read about Immanuel Kant, like, I don't know, it made me think, like, just your motives behind, like, the acts you do, like, do they have anything to do with whether it's moral or not, you know? Like, whether, like, how your intentions are. Like how some people at church, you have to give a tithe. Like, let's say someone gives a tithe, and it's not really, like, you're like, oh, I could probably buy a dress with that. But they're doing it because, you know, everyone's like, hey, why don't you put it down, you know? Or, no, sorry.
Right.
But you know, and then does that take away from... I mean, it's still the same act, and it's going to be good for the church, I guess, but then they didn't give it with, like, you know, their heart was in it. Does that affect it at all? Does that make it moral, do you think? So this was, yeah.
It's a good question. Like, if you do something out of obligation, is still, but you really don't want to. Is that really a moral act? Like, somebody like Kant would say, yes. He would say that wanting to do your duty is sort of icing on the cake. The main thing is your observing moral principle. Oh, this is what I ought to do. This is what's right and proper for me to do. And he thinks, if you want to do it too, or you even enjoy doing it, that's kind of useful because it makes it easier for you to do it. If you enjoy giving money away, then you're more likely, it makes it, you don't have to try so hard. Whereas if it just kills you to give away money, then you're going to have to really use some willpower to do your moral duty. In a way, you're at a disadvantage compared to somebody else who is naturally a cheerful and giving person. But Kant would say you still get credit. I'm not sure about, like, somebody like Mill would say it's really the result that matters. And he actually would say that the motive for Mill doesn't really matter at all. It's just the consequences of the action. So both of those guys said, for Kant, motive is everything, but motive shouldn't have to do with desire. For Mill, motive doesn't even matter. So he would say the only thing that matters is the results, whether in fact you do it or not. Although, again, if you enjoy doing your duty, you're more likely to do it. And so that's a good thing if you feel good about giving. But it's not necessarily a sin if you don't enjoy giving, as long as you do it.
School does he belong to, Kant?
Really? Kant's a deontologist.
And is he in our reading this week?
No, he's not till... What's next? Egoism. He's not till later on, after you till 2 weeks of utilitarianism.
Okay.
Well, you'll be ready for Kant. You're like, this utilitarianism thing, it doesn't work. Is there something else? You know, yeah, deontology. Or after that, virtue ethics. You know, like, I'm not satisfied yet. Nietzsche. I like the idea of Nietzsche because he's insane. Or was he able to see into the abyss and see the truth about morality? We'll talk about him at the end of the course. And then you had your hat for a while.
Yeah. So the argument could be made that regardless of motivations, selfish or whatever, the outcome, the results are what matter. So maybe the soldier was motivated by his own desires and he saved five of his comrades when he jumped on the grenade, but should it really matter if he was motivated by his selfishness if he saved other people?
Yeah, I suppose you could... does that mean we can go beyond ethical egoism? I suppose you would have to say that there'd never be a case where self-interest and the common good diverge, and I think that's an implausible factual claim. So, in order to have psychological egoism and be the correct theory of human nature, and for utilitarianism to be true, utilitarianism could never tell you to do something that you didn't want to do. But the facts of the world are such that there are always cases where it seems like sacrificing your own interests will serve the common good. I'll think about this for a minute, but for the time being, I'm going to stick with this. So this will be a good test question.
I wasn't necessarily phrasing within utilitarianism.
But I see what you mean. If everything you do is ultimately selfish, then anything a utilitarian would tell you to do would also be selfish. This is the biggest.
What is the goal?
I see what you mean, and maybe I'll have to rethink this. But one charge is this theory is vacuous. It's just meaningless. Let's say everything's selfish. What does that even mean?
I mean, if some guy jumped in from a bus to save me, I wouldn't call him out on being selfish at his funeral or whatever. I mean,
yeah, it's like whatever you do is selfish. Well, what does that mean? It's like people that say everything is God. What does that even mean? Like, I'm God, everything is God. I'm God, you're God, this table is God, my laptop is God. What does it mean to say that? I mean, if you pick up everything in the world and you say, oh, and it's God, what is that? It doesn't really say anything about it.
It means God is nothing.
Or everything.
And everything.
Saying God is nothing. Yeah, saying God. I suppose you could say God is nothing, right?
Nothing.
You could be an atheist. At least that would make sense. But if you say God is everything and everything is nothing, and then I guess you're a Buddhist or something. Zen Buddhist. That's all about like the void and the non-being, and I don't know. But see what I mean? It's another example of these sort of universal claims that if you try to figure out, well, what does that even mean? You're kind of scratching your head wondering, like, well, if everything's selfish and there's no unselfish acts, then what am I saying when I say something, the particular act is selfish? I'm just saying it's an act, right? I'm not adding anything to it because it's a feature that all acts have. What does it say? Oh, it's motivated by desire, I suppose. And all desires are selfish. But again, this ideas are selfish. What does that mean? That it's something you want to do? But it seems like there's more to selfishness than you wanted to do. Because it seems like people do things they don't want to do all the time.
Mm-hmm.
You don't want to call your mother, but you think you should. So you call her anyway, even though you don't like talking to her. I love talking to my mom. We have a great relationship. But I know other people, they hate their mothers, and they call them up anyway because they out of a sense of obligation.
You don't want to do your math homework.
Yeah, there you go. So, no, there's a case. Sometimes there's competing desires. Like, I think some philosophers would say that really what's going on there is you have a desire to do something fun right now, but also you have a desire not to fail math. And so your desire not to fail math, it impinges and makes you do your math or homework, and it defeats the desire to slack off and do something else.
What if someone's telling you what to do?
Then I suppose if you're a certain personality, you'll say, don't tell me what to do, and you'll like not do that thing, even if it's in your interest to do it.
Or do the opposite.
Or do the opposite, you know, and keep on doing it until you're like, you know, in middle age and still rebelling against your parents.
And back in college.
I know some people like that, too.
Yeah.
So let's anyway, lots of interesting issues. I wanted to talk a little bit about ethical egoism. So ethical egoism says nothing about how in fact people are, but it's about what people should do. And ethical egoism says you should always do what's in your interest. So is that really a moral theory, or is it an immoral theory?
Sounds immoral.
So what would you do differently if you were thinking, oh, I'm only going to act in my interest?
What would you do differently?
Yeah, would you not do certain things you're doing now? If it all comes down to, okay, I'm just going to do what's in my interest because I'm number one and I'm going to do what's going to serve me and make my life happy and fulfilling for me. Would you still have friends?
Yeah.
Why would you have friends? You're always helping them. They're always calling you with their problems and prattling on. And they want to borrow stuff from you. Sometimes they even want to borrow money from you, but you're in an uncomfortable position.
Because you can borrow money from them.
Ah, there you go. Yeah. It's a good point. So it's like a two-way street. So people have friends and sacrifice and so on because there's some expectation of getting back. Same thing with like romantic relationships or even like being part of a community, right? If you're part of a group and you're sacrificing for the group maybe they're going to take care of you when you need help. So there are a lot of things that maybe you would that you do that are in your interest. They may not seem like it initially, but if you think about it over the long haul of your life and in the larger context of your life, maybe a lot of it would be self-interest. Is there anything wrong with doing things for yourself?
I don't think so.
Not considering other people. You know, like, it's not just about, like, what if, like, it's not just that I'm going to, like, put down, like, everything that I want and just, like, attend to everybody else, you know? Because I don't want to be a pushover either.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, I'm going to look out for my interests as well. But if there's things that I could do along the way and help other people, like, on their journey, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm going to do it, you know? And it's going to make my journey more interesting, maybe, you know?
Yeah, if you think about, like, nobody likes a person who's always thinking about themselves and never thinking about anyone else's interests. Like, I don't know if you've known people that, like, They always have to have things their way, and they refuse to compromise. They don't keep their promises. You feel like you're the one who's giving in the relationship all the time, and you're getting very little in return. Now, one question might be, is this person benefiting from behaving that way? Or in the long term, are they actually harming themselves?
They'd be harming themselves. It wasn't in their best interest.
It seems like a lot of the time, it seems like it is the case that if you act in a selfish manner, paradoxically, you're actually harming your own interests.
Right.
So when you think about what's in my interest, it's sort of, you know, it initially it would think, oh, I'm just going to like never give money to charity, and I'm never going to have any friends, and if it's a romantic relationship, it's like it's all going to be take as much as you can, give as little as possible. But, you know, other people aren't going to put up with that.
No.
Yeah.
That's why I mentioned the social aspect. Is mm-hmm. that, you know, underlining need to be sociable is why we do certain things. Stay in the mix.
And like approval? I mean,
sure.
We have that desire to be have approval.
But also, so if you're always selfish and doing things only for yourself, you may not have anybody around you to socialize with.
Yeah.
And it's in your best interest. To me, I mean, it is in your best interest to care about other people and help them. I just feel like what you put out kind of comes back to you. And I mean, it makes sense. If you treat people well, usually they're more apt to treat you well.
But what about, like, strangers?
Same thing. If I open the door for this person, then, well, okay, for instance, I forgot my card at the store and I bought coffee. This lady was like, oh, don't worry about it, I'll buy it. She bought a stranger like $3 coffee.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, oh, thanks. She's like, just do it for someone else sometime.
So yeah, but what would be your interest is to have people buy coffee for you but not for them if it's somebody you're not likely to see again.
Well, I just think that might have happened because I don't know why it happened, but I am going to honor that.
But why? The question is, why would that be in your interest?
Yeah, because it
you're out $3
bring me more positivity.
Okay, so you're when you say positivity, are you thinking about something metaphysical or something?
Yeah.
Okay. Something happened.
Happen?
I mean, if there was such thing as karma, there wouldn't be so many jerks who were sort of on top of the world. Which actually, maybe show goes against this idea that it seems like there are people like. In Hollywood, for example, that crawl their way to the top by stepping on others, by breaking promises, mm-hmm. by putting on a false face, and they seem to do pretty well. So then the question is, because they only screw people they no longer have any use for. This is sort of like looking like Glaucon again, I guess. But the question is that always the case that acting, you know, it's always the case that acting sort of being boorish and selfish or only thinking about yourself, maybe you just have to be smart about it. Nadav?
I don't think there's like a standard set of self-interested acts. I mean, it's dynamic, right? It varies from person to person. So one person could be in their self-interest to have friends, another person is a sociopath and cares nothing about anyone else. What is self-interest, you know, is different.
Mm-hmm. But I mean, it does seem like there's usefulness for friends, whether you care about them or not. Though, like if you end up being kicked out of your apartment and you need a place to stay, and let's assume that you know the mission is a pretty lousy place to stay, to be able to stay at someone's house, or if you have like a difficult problem you need help with. I mean, there's friends can be very useful, and so even for a sociopath.
A person like the person you described, the Hollywood user,
uh-huh.
The thing is that at the end of the day, he buys friends. Do you know?
Oh, yeah. So
these people are paid for, but he can't buy real friends. I mean, these people he buy, they don't really like him. They probably, like, hate him. If push really came to shove and he lost everything, he wouldn't have anybody.
Yeah, so maybe he doesn't have a safety net and he's taking a risk, I suppose.
But what if he never... What if he loses everything?
Yeah, what if he's always on top? I mean,
then
it's
he won the gamble, but I mean, it's a possibility. He doesn't have real friends.
He also might have, I suppose he might have feelings of like insecurity or guilt or something like that, but maybe not. But there might be a trade-off there. Maybe being on top just means you have to be a ruthless person, and you might miss out on a few things, like having real friends or people that love you and care about you, as opposed to love your power and influence.
In that specific example, I think that unless like some apocalyptic event happened, a good insurance policy would be a better safety net than a couple friends who care about you.
I suppose, yeah, friends are unreliable. And romantic, you know, romantic partners aren't reliable too, right? Look at the divorce rate. Look how much, you know, relationships break up. And, you know, other people are notoriously unreliable. Maybe instead of trusting friends, you should have like a 401k and just never touch it.
But that's just
or
money.
Some investments.
There's
or
a
some.
Human connection that we crave in having real friendships. Or, you know, like these are the type of guys who might be 50 and have a 20-year-old who secretly hates them and is sleeping with someone else, but he gives them money. That type of setup.
Right.
You'll never know real love either, romantically.
Maybe he doesn't want love.
You know the difference?
Hey. Yeah, but then the problem with real love, though, is when you're the person stabbed you in the back, or the real love turns sour. It's really painful. So maybe people that have these arrangements with attractive partners that they're paying for with money, but they never have to worry about being betrayed, because it's all sort of an up and up exchange between a value between what the one person has and the other person doesn't have, and it's like a conscious trade,
those
as opposed to this kind of loosey-goosey thing where, oh, I'll care about you and you'll care about me and hope it all works out. And then your feelings are a bad way to have a relationship too, because they can change. Whereas if you have like an agreement, like a legal agreement, that's something that you can enforce, and that it's in the interest of either party to honor.
Not
my cynical side's coming out today. And that's what, you know, look at Ayn Rand, and people would say things like, well, she isn't really, she's like really cynical. She talks about trading value for value. That might work for business, but can that really work in relationships? And a person might say, well, yeah, and isn't like the idea of a loving relationship between two or more people, isn't that like a quintessential example of altruism, of having regard for another people, for another person, being willing to sacrifice yourself for their interests?
Mm-hmm.
And could an egoist really have that kind of relationship, which is based on love and trust and not just what am I getting out of it? Thoughts on that?
Was Ayn Rand, was she kind of a sociopath?
No, I would say definitely not a sociopath. She had a kind of tumultuous personal life. I think she was always very, I think she, in some ways she's unfairly characterized. She did have strong feelings for other people. She had a lifelong loving relationship with her husband. She had a torrid conscious affair with one of her proteges, Nathaniel Brandon. Consensual. So basically, the two. Although it's not clear that everybody's on board with that, I think her husband was a washed-up actor living off her book revenues. So where was he going to go?
So yeah, that's. He was kind of like the 20-year-old who gets paid.
I think originally, no, that she sort of fell for him. He was like this. He's this tall, good-looking. Actor, and she was an extra, and this is before she'd even sold the book, and she had a lot of ambition, but they got together when they were really young, and then as they're going on, she became sort of the breadwinner. Her first book took off, and then she had this young admirer that she took up with, and the two of them sort of went to both pairs of spouses, because he was married too, and they said, here's the arrangement we want. And I think one of them didn't want to, and that one of them didn't want to leave, and the other person, get this straight, the young protege spouse just didn't want to break up the relationship, was willing to tolerate it, and I guess the same thing was true with Frank O'Connor, her husband. Anyway, it's all in this book, by Barbara Brandon. That they made a movie. They made a movie out of it. So it's a little what's the word for it? Digression. But the question we're talking about is, could you really have a committed, loving relationship based on egoism? Isn't the idea of a love relationship, isn't it based on altruism?
I think it does. I think you can. Because I think even though you can be ethical egoism, but that doesn't dictate your feelings. So your feelings, you can act on your feelings. And your feelings vary on different people. So I think you can be a highly compassionate ethical egoist. Mm-hmm. You know, it'd be kind of interesting. Right? But then you can even find it in yourself just to fall in love and to have friends. And to act, like, live a fairly normal life. Like, you know, maybe someone that you unexpectedly run into could be an ethical egoist. Like a guy with family and friends. And, you know, I think it just depends on the person. If the person's very, like a psychopathic ethical egoist, it would be horrible. Like, you know.
Yeah. So maybe... Maybe you could, as an ethical egoist, maybe think about this. If you're in a relationship and it turns sour and you're always fighting and you're not getting anything out of it, or this other person is just being manipulative and abusive and what have you, well, then you extract yourself from the relationship. Why? Maybe you still have feelings for the person, right? Maybe you're still sort of vested in the relationship, but you're like, oh, this isn't in my interest anymore. When the relationship becomes more pain for you than pleasure, and you're not getting anything out of it, or it's one-sided, people tend to take off from the relationship and extract themselves from it. That shows that, I think Ayn Rand would say that, oh, you really are acting in your interest. Why are you in this relationship? Because it's mutually beneficial. When it ceases to be mutually beneficial, then you get rid of it. And that's what, and Rand would say that's what you should do. And it's same in relationships or in business. Yeah.
I read this thing one time, and it was like, I guess someone asked this old couple, they've been together for a really long time, how they did it, and they said, because we come from a generation when something's broken, like, we don't just throw it away and buy a new one, like, we try to fix it, you know? And, like, I don't believe in this ethical egoism or this, like, I don't know, the kind of weird, but I think kind of it's like, kind of how you were saying earlier, like, maybe when you care about somebody, it's like that becomes your interest, like that mom and her children, you know. It's in her interest to take care of her kids or feed them before her, because that becomes part of, like, her interest. But that doesn't mean, I don't know, it makes it seem like then you're always just going to be in love with yourself. Like, it's kind of narcissistic, because if you're loving people, you're doing it so you get love back. And I think it's not really...
Okay, but... That'll have to be the last word. We'll continue with egoism on Wednesday. Don't forget, Wednesday is the last day to take the first midterm exam without an extension.
So, can we try again?
Yeah.